Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into something pretty heavy: global ecology, conservation, and, well, the impact humans are having.
That's right. And we're drawing everything from a really detailed lecture by Dr. Hoffman. He doesn't pull any punches, but crucially, it's all backed by solid, quantifiable facts.
Yeah, no vague doom-mongering here, just the science.
Exactly. He wants you to understand the scale based on evidence.
And where he starts is kind of staggering. It's about how many species we think are out there versus how many we've actually found.
Right. So we've officially named just under 2 million species, which sounds like a lot, and it is a huge scientific effort.
What?
But the estimates, Dr. Hoffman mentioned figures from maybe 5 million, which is, conservative, all the way up to maybe even 100 million species alive right now.
Wow. So even the lowest guess means we haven't even found half of everything.
Not even close. And here's the really tough part, Dr. Hoffman pointed out. We'll likely never know the true number.
Because they're disappearing too fast?
Oh.
Exactly. Species are going extinct, some probably before we even knew they existed. It's a race we're losing.
That really makes you think about what biodiversity actually means. It's not just counting species, is it?
No, not at all. Dr. Hoffman was clear there are three levels we need to consider. First, there's genetic diversity.
Okay, so that's like the variety within one species. Different genes in different populations.
Precisely. Then you have species diversity, which is the one we usually think about, the number of different species and how many individuals of each.
Right.
But the third level, maybe the most fundamental, is ecosystem diversity. How many different kinds of environments are there? Forests, wetlands, coral reefs, deserts, the whole range.
And losing one type of ecosystem is way bigger than losing one species, even.
It's catastrophic for overall stability, yeah.
Yeah.
Which leads us to how we're losing it. Dr. Hoffman used this great analogy, the web of life.
Ah, yes, the idea that everything's connected.
Totally. No species is an island. You pull one thread, like destroying one part of the web.
And it tugs on everything else. The whole structure gets distorted.
Exactly. And that tension, that distortion, that's the crisis. Look, some extinction is natural, it happens. But Dr. Hoffman stressed the rate of extinction now. It's skyrocketed because of us.
Driven by human activity.
Undeniably. And he gave a specific example, the Marianas bat.
Oh, yeah, the fruit bat. A keystone species, right. Really important pollinator.
Absolutely critical for its ecosystem, but it's being hunted almost into oblivion. Why? Because it's considered a delicacy.
And the irony there is just,
Yeah.
it's awful. The bats eat fruit with neurotoxins.
Which then build up in the people who eat the bats, causing neurological problems. It's bizarre.
Yet the hunting continues.
And worse, Dr. Hoffman pointed out this vicious cycle. The rarer the bat gets, the more prized it becomes. So the value goes up, increasing the incentive to hunt the last ones.
Rarity driving the demand.
Yeah.
Crazy. Okay, so that sets up the big four causes of damage Dr. Hoffman laid out. Number one is pretty obvious, I guess. Loss of habitat.
Yeah, this is the big one. Humans converting land for farming, cities, roads, you name it.
But it's not just about losing acres, is it? He talked about fragmentation.
That's the crucial detail. Breaking up large, wild areas into smaller, isolated patches, like ecological islands.
And being on an island is bad for species.
Well, think about it. If you're a creature that needs the deep forest interior, suddenly you're living near an edge.
More predators from outside? More wind, maybe? Different conditions.
Exactly. More light, different humidity. It changes everything. Those edges become hostile territory for many species. So a fragmented forest offers much less usable space than a solid block of the same total area.
Got it. Okay, cause number two, introduced species, things that don't belong there.
Right. Sometimes accidentally, like rats on ships or mussels on boat hulls, but often, believe it or not, introduced on purpose.
Like kudzu, that vine you see everywhere in the South.
The classic example Dr. Hoffman used,
Yeah.
brought in with good intentions, mind you, to stop soil erosion. And it did.
Uh-oh. Too well.
way too well. It just grows over everything, smothering native plants because there's nothing evolved there to keep it in check. It really highlights what Dr. Hoffman said about ecology being incredibly complex. You just can't predict all the knock-on effects.
Makes sense.
Okay,
Okay, number three, overharvesting, taking too much too fast.
and here the market is often the driver. He gave two powerful examples. First, elephant ivory.
Just heartbreaking. Poachers killing the whole animal just for the tusks.
And Dr. Hoffman's point was that enforcement alone isn't the full answer. You have to kill the market. If ivory was worthless, the poaching would largely start, right?
Makes sense. The demand drives it.
Then look at bluefin tuna. Back in the 80s, Dr. Hoffman said they were almost worthless, used for cat food.
Seriously.
Cat food.
Yep. Then suddenly, the sushi market in Japan exploded.
Yeah.
High-quality tuna became incredibly valuable almost overnight.
And the population.
Crashed. Down 80% in just 10 years, according to Dr. Hoffman. It's that same vicious cycle again. Rarity increases value, which speeds up the hunt. Wow. Okay, fourth major cause. Global change. This is broader, right? Climate change. Pollution.
Yeah, encompasses a lot. He used acid rain as a specific historical example. That's rain or snow made acidic by pollutants, mainly sulfur from burning diesel and coal.
I remember hearing about that.
But here's a bit of good news, Dr. Hoffman shared. The worst acidity was back around 1970. Scientists flagged it. Laws were passed, like the Clean Air Act amendments.
And it actually got better.
Significantly better. It shows we can identify a problem and policy can make a real difference. Which is, hopeful.
Definitely need some hope. But why is pH change, whether it's rain or oceans, so bad for living things?
It comes down to proteins. Proteins do almost all the work in cells, and they need a very specific 3D shape to function. Think of it like a key meeting the right shape for a lock.
Okay.
Dr. Hoffman explained that if you change the environment too much, like the pH or the temperature, the protein loses its shape. It denatures, like cooking an egg white, it changes and can't go back.
And if the protein shape is wrong.
It stops working completely. And if enough essential proteins stop working, the organism can't survive.
That's a pretty fundamental problem. Which ties into this idea Dr. Hoffman discussed, the extinction vortex. Sounds ominous.
It is. He described it like water spiraling down a drain. Once a population gets small enough, certain factors kick in that make it decline even faster, pulling it down towards extinction.
And size is the key.
Yeah.
Small populations are more vulnerable.
Absolutely critical. One factor is just random chance, what biologists call genetic drift.
Random chance.
Yeah. Imagine you have a huge population, maybe 1 billion birds. If, say, 15 birds with a rare gene randomly die in a rock slide, it barely registers. But if your whole population is only 30 birds,
And 15 die randomly,
okay.
that's half your population gone.
Exactly. And potentially a huge chunk of your genetic diversity wiped out just by bad luck. Small populations are fragile.
And doesn't being small also lead to inbreeding?
That's the other major factor Dr. Hoffman mentioned. In small groups, individuals are more likely to be related, so they're more likely to pass on the same harmful hidden genes, recessive alleles, to their offspring.
Which makes the next generation less healthy, less fit.
Right. Lower survival, lower reproduction, which makes the population even smaller, feeding back into the vortex. It accelerates the decline.
It sounds like a death spiral. Can anything stop it?
Sometimes, yes. Dr. Hoffman gave a great example of extinction rescue with prairie chickens in Illinois. Their population was tiny, eggs weren't hatching. Classic vortex situation.
So what do they do?
Ecologists brought in a few birds from larger, healthier populations nearby, just a small influx of new genes.
And it worked.
Almost immediately, egg viability shot right up. It showed that if you can break that genetic bottleneck, you can pull a species back from the brink.
That's amazing. But preventing it in the first place,
Yeah.
that involves knowing how many individuals you need, right? The MVP.
The minimum viable population. Yep. And this is where it gets really complicated, politically and socially. Dr. Hoffman used grizzly bears to illustrate.
Okay, what's the MVP for grizzlies?
Well, for just short-term survival, maybe a few decades, you need about 50 bears. But even that small number needs a huge area bigger than Yellowstone and Grand Teton Parks combined. That's what he called the solid biotic boundary.
50 bears need that much space. Wow. Okay, but short term isn't really the goal, is it?
No, for long-term indefinite survival to truly escape the vortex, the science says you need more like 500 grizzlies.
500, and the area needed for that.
Enormous. That's the dashed circle Dr. Hoffman showed. And crucially, that area includes a lot of private land.
And there's the conflict.
Right there. Scientific necessity, the bears need room to roam and maintain genetic health bumps right up against private property rights. It's a
Yeah.
massive challenge for conservation.
So, given we can't save everything everywhere, how do we decide where to focus?
Dr. Hoffman argued for prioritizing biodiversity hotspots. These are areas that are incredibly rich in species, have lots of unique species found nowhere else, and are under severe threat.
Like coral reefs, maybe? Some rainforests.
Exactly. Places like that. The idea is to get the most conservation bang for our buck, essentially. But it involves a tough admission.
That we have to let some things go.
Pretty much. Dr. Hoffman put it bluntly. We're just going to have to let certain things go down the tubes elsewhere. It's a grim reality of limited resources.
Shifting back to global change, one thing Dr. Hoffman said that really stuck with me was about predictions.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
That our climate predictions are always turning out to be too conservative,
Yeah.
that the reality is consistently worse than we thought it would be.
That's sobering. And a big part of that is the ocean. It's been absorbing a massive amount of CO2 we've pumped out, which has actually helped slow down atmospheric warming.
Okay, that sounds good. But there's a catch.
Big catch. When CO2 dissolves in water, it forms carbonic acid, so the oceans are steadily becoming more acidic.
Acidification. And that goes back to the protein problem.
Partly, but it also directly affects things like coral reefs. They build their skeletons out of calcium carbonate, and that process gets much harder or even impossible in more acidic water. It literally dissolves the foundation of those ecosystems.
Wow. Okay, beyond climate, there are also toxins.
Yeah.
He talked about biological magnification.
Right. This is how certain persistent chemicals like PCBs, those industrial compounds, or DDT, the pesticide, build up in the food chain.
They don't break down, so they just accumulate.
Exactly. Dr. Hoffman showed data. PCBs might be at a tiny level in the water, like 0.025 parts per million. Seems harmless.
What?
But the algae absorb it, small critters eat the algae, bigger fish eat them, birds eat the fish. At each step, the concentration gets higher. By the time you reach the top predator, like a herring gull in his example, the level was 124 parts per million.
That's a huge increase from 0.025 to 124.
Massive magnification, and at that level, it causes major problems, like interfering with eggshell formation in birds, leading to reproductive failure.
So even tiny amounts of pollution at the bottom can be devastating at the top.
Precisely, and it's not just industrial stuff anymore. We've created this chemical soup in our waterways with pharmaceuticals.
Drugs, like leftover prescriptions.
Yeah, people flushing pills, plus drugs given to livestock getting into runoff. These are compounds designed to be biologically active at low doses.
So even traces in the water can affect wildlife.
Definitely. Dr. Hoffman cited studies showing things like altered sex ratios in fish populations because these potent hormone-like signals are messing with their development.
Man. Okay, pulling it all together. Habitat loss, introduced species, over-harvesting, global change. What did Dr. Hoffman identify as the ultimate driver behind all of it?
No ambiguity there. Human population growth and our staggering energy consumption. We're nearing 8 billion people. The curve is still shooting upwards.
And more people means more demand for everything: land, resources, energy.
It exacerbates every single pressure we've talked about. He did note one, slightly positive sign. The rate of population growth, the steepness of that curve, is starting to slow down a bit.
Oh, really? Why?
He attributed it largely to government policies, mentioning China specifically, suggesting deliberate action can have an effect on that trajectory.
Okay, but population's one thing. What about how much each person uses?
Ah, yes. The energy map. That was stark. He pointed directly at the US, calling it the reddest country, the highest per capita energy use by far.
So even though we're a smaller percentage of the global population,
We use a hugely disproportionate amount of energy, which means each individual here has a much larger ecological footprint, contributing more to these problems per person.
so it's a cycle. Population grows, demand grows, especially high energy demand in places like the US, leading to habitat loss, pollution, climate change.
Which then makes it harder for ecosystems to recover, making the problems worse. It's a feedback loop.
It sounds incredibly daunting. Did Dr. Hoffman offer any models for success? Anywhere it's working?
He did highlight Costa Rica. They were facing huge environmental and economic problems. Deforestation was rampant.
And they turned it around. How?
Through a really smart zoned reserve system, they established core protected national parks, but then surrounded them with buffer zones of private land where owners agreed to sustainable practices in exchange for benefits, often linked to ecotourism.
So they found a way to make conservation pay off economically.
Exactly. They leveraged their incredible biodiversity as an asset. It showed that it is possible, though difficult, to align ecological, economic, and social goals.
That's genuinely encouraging, a model that works.
It is. But Dr. Hoffman didn't let us off the hook easily. His final point was, well, intensely personal.
What was that?
He did a calculation. He said, basically, you could live the most sustainable, eco-friendly life imaginable, recycling, biking, low consumption, everything.
Right.
But if you have just one child, especially a child raised in a high consumption country like the US, statistically, the resources that child will consume over their lifetime will likely negate all the personal sacrifices you made.
Wow. Just one child can erase all that effort.
Because of the sheer scale of resource use and energy demands embedded in that lifestyle, it's a really provocative thought about the ultimate impact of population and consumption hitting right at our personal choices.
That is, yeah, that's a lot to chew on. The true cost, scaled up.
Leaves you thinking, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Thanks for walking us through Dr. Hoffman's insights today, and thank you for joining us on The Deep Dive. We hope you'll keep thinking about this complex web.